Mike joined the Marine Corps in 1995 because he accidentally bumped into a Marine recruiter in the hallway of his high school. During his four-year enlistment, he deployed to Okinawa twice and trained in Thailand, Guam, and Tinian during those deployments. Mike was my first team leader when I got to 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines as a boot Marine. He became my first mentor after my own adventures through boot camp and the School of Infantry. He was honorably discharged in 1999 as an E4 or corporal. Soon after leaving the Marines, he was hired as a firefighter and has served for several years. Hello everyone, and welcome to Ghost Turd Stories. I'm your host, Troy Gent. Ghost Turd Stories' mission is using humorous and challenging stories from veterans and first responders to reduce the burden of families whose veteran or first responder took their own life. Ghost Turd Stories' vision is to use humorous and challenging stories to prevent suicide within our ranks and reduce the burden of families whose veteran or first responder took their own life. We hope to attract veterans and first responders, as well as those interested in knowing more about what it's like to be in our shoes while we wear or wore those shoes. At Ghost Turd Stories, we tell and write the stories of veterans and first responders for their families and friends. We love storytelling and believe there is nothing more inspiring and nothing that gets people to take action like a great story. Families and friends want to know the sacrifices we made, the services we rendered, and the people we lifted, so they can be inspired and learn about the legacy we left. Our podcast is the face of our company, but we want every family who cares to know about the experiences their veteran and or first responder went through for them. We interview veterans and first responders, collect pictures, write their stories, and compile them in a book for their families and friends to enjoy. Oftentimes, it's difficult for us to talk to our loved ones about what we did, saw, and heard while serving. At Ghost Turd Stories, we bridge the gap. For pricing, visit linktr.ee/ghostturdstories and click on the second tab directly under the podcast link called Let Us Write Your Story. That's linktr.ee/ghostturdstories. Welcome, Mike. Thanks for being on the show. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and your service record.
That's a pretty broad question there, but I had no intention whatever after high school of going into the military, much less the Marine Corps. But senior year, I was walking down the hallway and literally bumped into some guy and like initially didn't see who he was, and I turned and it was a big swole up black dude in his Charlie uniform, Jamaican guy. And I was like, whoa, man, sorry about that. And he knew my name. He's like, hey, Mike, I've been looking for you, man. I'm like, you know my name. That's freaky. Because I've seen him around campus. He's like, I want to talk to you. And I'm like, no, like it's not what I'm looking for. But I didn't really have a whole lot going. So bumped into him again, and he sucked me into the recruiter office, and we started talking. And I was like, well, that's interesting, right? And he had two guys there. Recruiter assistants. One guy was a machine gunner, so a 31, 0331. The other guy was a saltman, so 0351. And these guys were talking about what they did, what their jobs entailed. And I'm like, man, that sounds pretty awesome. He got me in there to take the ASVAB, got through all that. And my ASVAB scores were like, well, like electronics and mechanics is like what you score good at. And I'm like, well, I could do that like in the Navy, Air Force, right? Like, I want to go in the Marine Corps. I don't want to be a pogue, essentially, right? So I asked for it, and I got it. 0311 infantry, right? Like, that's what I was blessed with. But my recruiter tried. He tried, like, hell to talk me out of it. He's like, Mike, you don't want to do that. Like, all you're going to do is hike around everywhere and carry a bunch of heavy stuff, and you're going to be in the desert and the jungle. And I'm like, well, that's what the Marine Corps is about, right? Like, that's what I want, or I'm not going. So he happily gave me that. He's like, I can guarantee you 03. I don't know where you're going to end up. And I'm like, that's fine. That's kind of how it all started. So I ended up in like the delayed entry program with a handful of other knuckleheads that I went to school with. And we do our training once a week, whatever it was. Go down there and PT and learn some things about the Marine Corps, kind of brief you before you went to boot camp. I got to know all those guys pretty good. We were all hanging out one day and just all the cadets, whatever you want to call us, the deppies, whatever, doing things we shouldn't have been doing. And we're at a house having some beers, underage, whatever. And like, we get a little screwy and I'm like, well, man, how's everybody going to get home? Someone's like, call Sergeant Brown, the recruiter. I'm like, that's a great idea, right? Like there's like, you know, six of us here, right? Like he needs us all to sign up and go and, you know, fill his quota. So he wasn't happy about it, but he came and picked everybody up and got everybody home.
So how many guys was he signing up in that group, would you say?
I don't know. There was probably 8 or 10 of us in the program at the same time.
So he had some incentive to save your butt, basically.
Oh yeah, yeah. He would have done whatever we needed, right, to meet his quota. But I remember going to like the first little session, PT session is what it was, right? So we're doing like our pull-ups and sit-ups and our run, whatever. And he was just jacked up. I mean, the dude was like, he was shredded. So we're just down there in our regular civvy gear. And he comes out in like this onesie, like a bodysuit. And I'm like, what in the world is that, right? It's like tighter than hell. But I mean, like he's proud of it, right? Like grabs the bar and does like 20 like behind the head strict pull-ups. And I'm like, oh man, this guy's bad, right? Anyway, kind of got off subject there. But yeah, from that went to boot camp. A lot of it was not fun at all. But I remember, well, you know, you went through there too, right? But I remember in second phase, they handed out the Long John underwear. They were like thermals, and that's what we wear at night. We do like the hygiene inspection, and then I remember they're like, let us pray. So you'd like bow your head. And I looked up at the kid across from me, and he was a weird looking kid anyway, but he had his long john bottoms like pulled up to his armpits and was like standing at attention with his neck bent back in the wrong direction. And I saw that and I chuckled. And then all I hear is this. And I was like, oh shit, is he coming for me? And next thing I know, like, this drill instructor's got me by the long john top underwear by the neck, like holding me up against the rack, just screaming in my face. And up to that point, none of the drill instructors knew my name, but that guy knew my name after that. But you remember in boot camp, like if you wanted to address the drill instructor, you had to first, this recruit request permission to speak, right? You had to ask to talk first, and then they'd either say yes or no, right?
Yeah. It's like a whole new language. Like, I don't think I ever got it right, even after 3 months.
Yeah, I know. I'd always screw it up too. But we were doing drill, and I could hear this kid popping off like, sir, recruit, blah, blah, request permission to speak. Like, get away from me. I heard it like 3-4 times, right? All of a sudden, I hear the drill instructor go, you have got to be kidding me. He used some different words, but he's like, you got to be kidding me. And so we're all like, what the hell just happened, right? Well, apparently he needed to use the head, but the drill instructor wouldn't even let him ask to use the head. So he literally stood there and was standing in a puddle of piss. I'm like, man, you must have really had to go at that point, right? Like, you must have really had to go. Also, in second phase, I remember I had a girl back home that was sending letters, and we're in second phase during mail call, and it's muddy and rainy and crap. And they call my name, so I go running up there, and the drill instructor is like feeling the envelope, like there's something in there. He's like, I need you to open that. And so, like, wet hands, whatever, I rip it open, and not glitter, but you know the little hole punches that you use, or that, like, you punch papers out for, like, the binders?
Like confetti.
Confetti, essentially, right? Well, I rip this thing open, and that stuff goes everywhere, right into the mud. And the drill instructor takes a look at it. He's like, you're going to pick up every one of those. So I'm trying to pick these little things out of the mud. I'm like, where am I going to put them? He's like, put that trash in your pocket. I'm like, oh, God. So I got a pocket full of mud. And when I wrote her back, I thanked her for that one. And boot camp, there was always posted fire watch, right? So it was like an hour at a time or whatever they went through. Like, I was on fire watch, And I heard something out the window of the barracks. I heard like boots. And I look out and I see what looks like, I mean, he's dressed like a first phase recruit, like pants still folded down, but he's got like, he's got web gear on with like two canteens and he's making a beeline for the fence. He's by himself. And I'm like, go, brother, go. That's what he got. I don't know where you're going to end up, man, but probably at the airport or on the freeway, one of the two.
Yeah, I think I never saw it, but I think I had, we had a recruit that tried that.
I don't know if he made it. I don't know if he got away with it or not, but he was in full stride, just headed for the fence.
After boot camp, you went to SOI and then 3-7, right?
Yep, exactly. Oh, man. You remember Range 400? We had like 400, 410 Alpha.
I ran those as a lieutenant too, as a platoon commander, so.
Oh, yeah. You got to go back for another round. I remember early on, like out Range 400, like I was the boot at that point, right? So we were, I don't know if it was 400 or 410, the one that had all the trenches dug in it.
Oh, yeah. Is that the one that had the Ivan targets?
Yeah, I believe there was pop-ups and.
I think that's 410 Alpha or something.
Okay, yeah, that sounds right. But so they had already, like, pounded it with mortars, whatever, and so we jump in the trench and start clearing the trench, and I'm on point, so I'm making my way through there, and I come around this bend in the trench, and I see fins sticking out of the trench. And I'm like, whoa, like, stop everybody, like, hold up, man, like, there's a 60 Mike, I'm pretty sure, like, unexploded in the trench in front of us. So, like, stop everybody, squad leader comes up, and, like, yep, we're backing out of here. So, EOD had to come out, and, of course, you know, that's a couple-hour deal. So, we all got a little break out of that, but that it may have been a total dud, but I wasn't going to run up and kick it, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've jumped down a few times with a fin sticking right in my face, you know? Stuff like that, you're like, oh!
Yeah, I remember running another range out there. I don't know that it was like a designated range, but one of the guys in our platoon, I won't say his name, but we didn't really have targets on that range, but we had live rounds. So we're doing the whole fire movement thing. And, I could hear the guy next to me, like he'd fire and he was hitting something. Like there was a ping. Like, he was hitting something metallic, something metal. I'm like, what the hell is he shooting at? And I look up and it's like an old, I mean, it could have been a sim round, but it was like an old, it was a big bomb laying there essentially. And old Dave was punching rounds right off of that thing. And I'm like, dude, are you that stupid?
He's just shooting at it.
He's like, well, I didn't think it was real. I mean, it looks right. Whatever, man. Like, that's just silly. Thailand. You went to Thailand with us, didn't you? Cobra Gold, probably 99, right?
99, yeah.
99, yeah. So we were there twice. But I don't know if it was 97 or 99, but we'd go stay in those hotels when we got libo. I remember who I was sharing a room with, but we left the hotel and walked by a certain sergeant's room, and you could just hear like all this like screaming back and forth going on in there. And like, as we're going by the door opens up and he's like, hey, I need you guys to get this girl out of my room. I'm like, well, what's going on? He's like, it doesn't matter. Just get her out of here. And she's mad. Like, I don't know what's happening, but like, hey, you need to leave. So a few of us like helped get her out of the room. And later that day, we're sitting down in Pattaya Beach, and we see the same sergeant running down the strip in Pattaya Beach. And there's a girl coming after him in hot pursuit, carrying a steel pipe of some sort. And she's screaming. I don't know what she was saying, but Shore Patrol, I think, was like the Navy cops that they'd have on shore. And anyway, they got him stopped. So we walked over. They're like, hey, what's going on, man? And like, apparently he owed her some money. And didn't know he owed her money, and she demanded her money. But the best part was, he's like, all right, whatever, like pulls out his wallet and gives her money, and she's like, oh, that's too much, like gives him back like 10 bucks.
Gives him back 10 bucks.
When we were in Oki, were you there for any of the lockdowns, the typhoon lockdowns?
Yeah, a couple.
So I remember during the typhoon lockdown, someone had the harebrained idea, like, to strap on the flak jacket, Kevlar, and grab a poncho and let's go like windsail parking lot. It was like 120 mile an hour winds whipping across there.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was a great idea, right? I know you weren't a drinker, but those of us that were, when we knew those were coming, we'd go to the package store and stock up on beer and whatever they'd let us buy. But my roommate at the time, he drank quite a bit, so the little mini fridge was always full. And we woke up the one morning during lockdown, and he goes over to the fridge and he's like, "Dude, where's all the beer?" I'm like, "I have no idea. Like, it was full." Like, "Well, nobody came in, I don't think." So we started looking around, and the ceiling tile was like out of place. And I know who it was, even though we never fessed up to it, but somebody got up in the ceiling and went between got into the room and got all the beer out.
He knew about the beer.
Well, yeah, but we slept through it is the impressive part. You know, my second pump there, I had a chance to do a FAP, fleet assistance program. I don't know how I can remember what this stuff even stood for 20 plus years ago, but yeah, I don't remember what I did yesterday, but I can remember this stuff. But I went through like the range coaches course, me and a guy from one of the other platoons in India Company. And when we got to Oki the second time, they offered me a spot to go work on the rifle range. So I'm like, yeah, 6 months? I'm going to miss like NTA, CTA, like all the jungle crap. Like, hell yeah. My roommate at the time, the old guy in the platoon, you know who I'm talking about probably.
Yeah.
He was able to talk me out of it. He's like, "Man, think about the times, right? Like all the things you're going to miss. Like you're going to miss." And I'm like, "Exactly. 2 week packages in the jungle, all the humps, all the nonsense that I don't want to do." So he's like, "I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. If it ever gets so bad that you're really mad at me," he's like, "I give you free rein. You can just come up and whoop my ass."
Is he a real estate agent now?
Yeah, he does. Yep, exactly.
Yeah, I'm gonna actually. I'm working on interviewing him. So.
Yeah. No. He would be. He would be a good one. He's even as old as he is. He's still pretty sharp. Yeah. So he talks me out of it, and we're up in the northern training area, and I forget who our lieutenant was, but he got us lost, and we've been out there. It'd been raining for a week, week and a half, whatever, and we're out of food. It was crap. I'm pretty sure I was a squad leader at the point. I was getting pretty pissed off, and I'm like, this is just sucks. And I'm like, you know what? I got a freebie. Where's Carney? I go like walking the line. I'm like, "Hey, Carney, where's Carney at?" They're like, "Oh, he's down to the left, second squad or whatever he was in." They go creeping down there like, "Carney, it's off to the left. Carney, yeah, man, where are you at?" He's like, "Right here." So, like, jump on his back. We roll around in the mud and just like, punch each other a few times, and he's like, "Dude, the times, right? Like, I told you this would be a good time." I'm like, "I hate you right now. I hate you so bad right now." But afterwards, you know, it was terrible at the time, but you can look back and laugh about it.
Yeah, it's after the hardship that was the best part about it. So
that's the best part of it. I mean, really, because when you're doing it, I mean, you think about the McCress humps and all that stuff. Like, all right, we're gonna walk out, you know, 15 miles and turn around and walk right back. Well, that's a great idea, right? For what? Just to say we did it, you know? Like, I regretted that, but then afterwards I thanked them. I'm like, you know what? Like, I wouldn't trade that time for nothing. I've got a photo album about 3 inches thick full of pictures of that 6 months over there.
Yeah, I've actually got a picture of you in the back of a 5-ton with, I think it was Gorsuch and Gartman with their head between their legs. I don't know what they were doing, but yeah, you were sitting next to them, like making a smirk at them. They were doing something funny. I don't know, but you finished up at 3-7 and then you got out and became a firefighter.
Yeah. So I'd done a ride along while I was home on leave with a guy I knew, worked in the next town over, and did like I don't know, 8 or 12 hour ride along. And I was like, "Man, this is cool. Like, this is what you guys do." And like, showed me all the equipment. I was like, I could get on board with this. So while I was still in, you know, we didn't have the internet back then. So I was buying books.
Yeah. And you've been a firefighter for, did you say 20 years?
22 years just this week. Yeah. Full time. I was a volunteer for a little while. It's worked out good. My department was really small 24 years ago. So they still had volunteers. So they put me through all the training that I needed to basically get the prerequisites to test for a full-time spot. So full-time spot came around. I missed it the first time. I got beat out by a guy. So yeah, it took me 2 years of trying to get on, but.
Since your department was so small, what was your academy like?
My academy was small. There was only 3 guys in it. Both these guys were quite a bit older than me. At that time, the city wasn't blowing up like it has over the last 15, 18 years, whatever. The department has changed a lot over the years. You know, the academies now, I mean, they're taking laterals. If you work for one department and there's an opening, you can come in and potentially get in there, whereas before that wasn't a thing. But it was good. We got messed with a bit, but nothing too crazy. It wasn't boot camp or anything like that.
What are some of your more ridiculous emergency calls you've experienced? Calls that you got to and you're like, what the heck? Why did you call us?
Well, there's a lot of those, man. Like, one of the guys I work with, he likes to refer to us as professional men.
Professional men?
Professional men, right? Like, if you're like a married couple and your smoke detector starts chirping in the middle of the night, like, are you going to run out of the house and call 911? Probably not.
Professional men. It took me a second.
Yeah, and it's like, all right, well, we get there and like, okay, cool. Like, yeah, that detector's chirping. Usually means the battery's low. Like, I see you have a ladder right there. Did you like pull the battery out or do it? I'm like, no. I just wanted to get out of the house. I didn't know like something was on fire. I'm like, really? Those calls are pretty common. We get a lot of calls for like the smell of gas, you know, gas leaks in houses. And it happens and it's absolutely dangerous. But I remember one we had where we responded to the smell of gas in a structure. So it's typically a multi-engine response, battalion chief, or the gas company is probably going to be coming too. But we go in there and start like looking around the house and like, I don't smell anything. And this whole house is electric, right? Electric stove, electric water heater, electric furnace. And, like, walk out into the garage and I'm like, well, I smell gasoline out here. And the guy walks out and he's like, yeah, that's exactly what I was smelling. Like, oh, it's gasoline. Like, you have like lawnmowers and cars and motorcycles and stuff in here. A call will come in for a house on fire. Not a definite address, but an area. So go out there and like driving around, like, I don't see anything, smell anything. And you finally get a hold of the calling party and they're like, yeah, like right over there to the north, like a block over. Like, oh, those Christmas lights? Really? In the season here when all the ducks are having their little litters, we actually carry a net on the fire engine because the ducks are not very smart, right? So the little baby ducks are following mom and mom goes across, you know, the storm drain, the gutter or whatever, and the babies fall in there. So people call us for that.
Okay.
It's a normal thing to the point we start carrying these nets. Yeah. So we went to one of those and it's like on the corner of a pretty busy intersection and like, yeah, you can hear them down there. So usually like we'll put a hose in one side and just kind of push them the other way and somebody will scoop them out and mom will take off with them, right? So this was by like a, I want to say it was a dentist's office. We get there and there's, I don't know, 5, 6 little baby ducks come out. Mom kind of corrals them all up and they're pretty amazing because they keep track, right? Like if there's one missing, they seem to know. And all the girls from the dentist office are up there like, oh, you guys are so awesome. That's so cool. Well, all of a sudden, Mama Duck goes straight out into a 45-mile-an-hour intersection. And here comes a Jeep, like, Grand Cherokee. And just one swoop, man. It was just a puff of feathers. And the girls from the dentist's office are screaming. They're like, oh, my God. I'm like, oh, shit. That was horrible. Like, I had no control over that. Like, nothing. We can't do anything with them, right? Like, we let them go. Mama takes care of them, but she let them. Oh my God. She let them right into the grinder.
Slaughtered the whole litter, huh?
Not all of them. Mama, all the babies. They all went together.
I've been using Isagenics since 2017. These products have made a world of difference in my quality of life, health, energy, muscle definition, strength, and endurance. My bread and butter products have been the Daily Essentials multivitamins with Isagenesis, which is a telomere support supplement, the Isoline meal replacement shake, the Tri-Release protein shake, the collagen, the green drink, and the Cleanse for Life support system. However, Isagenics has many products and can cater to your unique lifestyle and goals. Click the link in the show notes or visit nmp.isagenics.com. Besides just using the products, there is an option to partner with me and the company to build your own business with no capital upfront. You can do as little as pay for your products and as much as making a full-time income. I love these products and will use them the rest of my life. For more information, you can email me at ghostturdstories@gmail.com.
The first call that I went on that really made me laugh, God, this was a long time ago, but it sticks with me. We went on a call for a dog bite. Like, well, it could be a legit call, right? Like, dogs tear people up, right? So we show up, no idea what's going on, and there's a few cop cars there already, and there's cops standing in the front yard, and they're all kind of giggling. Like, well, it can't be too bad, you know? So we go into this house, and the guy's laying in between the bathroom and into the hallway. And he's got a towel, like, over his midsection. So we go walking down there, and the ambulance folks had showed up right about the same time. And it's like 5 in the morning, and there's blood all over the bathroom floor. There's beer bottles floating in the bathtub that's still full of water. Blood in the bathtub.
Is this his dog?
Yeah, it was his dog. But so we get up to him and start talking to him. Like, hey, man, like, what's going on? Where are you bit? He's like, you don't want to know. We're like, well, that's what we're here for, man. Like, there's a lot of blood. Like, we need to check you out. It's like, well, where is it? And he's like, well, it's on my dick. I'm like, oh, shit. This is not going to be good because the amount of blood was everywhere, right? But, I mean, that piece is pretty vascular, right? Like, it cut on the face, you know. It bleeds a lot, especially probably if you're at, like, full staff. But yeah. So the paramedic off the ambulance, like, his first question, and this medic, you'd have to know him to appreciate his bedside manner. He's like, so what was the dog doing, you know, with your junk in his mouth? And I kind of chuckled. I'm like, he's like, well, I was playing with the dog and he must have mistaken his bone for mine. I'm like, come on, man. Like, where's the peanut butter at? Like, you're lying to us right now, right? So they're like, all right, man, well, let's take a look at it. Like, we got to see it. And he's like, we got to see it. And he's like, do you really want to? I'm like, no, I don't want to, but like, we got to check it out, right? So he uncovers himself and he's got like 2 puncture wounds, like right in the tip.
Oh,
I was expecting like a full severed,
like it was gone.
Bobbit. Yeah. Like, I mean, as much blood as there was like that. Yeah. That's kind of what I was expecting to see. But luckily, luckily for him, it wasn't that bad. But
so did the bite, settle him down? Like as far as, full staff to no staff?
Oh, he was no staff. Yeah, he's less than half staff anyway.
Right? Less than half staff.
He was flying low. I felt bad for him.
I was getting a vasectomy, and I hadn't gone in yet. I was telling the UPS guys I was getting a vasectomy. And I don't know how the joking started, but he says, oh, yeah, I went to get a vasectomy. The nurse started touching me. I started getting excited, so she took a wooden spoon and smacked me on the tip. And he says it went to 0. That's what he said. I said, I can't believe that.
Oh, man. I might have went the other way with that. I don't know. Well, sorry. I'm not supposed to talk like that.
That's all right.
There's a lot of calls like that, man. I mean, I could go on and on about them, but people never fail to amaze me. You know, like car accidents. We had one where a car had went into, you know, like a 3-rail post and pole fence. The posts are probably 6-inch, 8-inch diameter. And then the rails are, I don't know, probably 2-inch diameter, maybe a little bigger. But the call came in as a car into a power pole, lines down, et cetera. And we get there and there's power lines down. There's, again, people sitting on the power pole, like waiting for us to get there with, you know, hot lines on the ground. There's a guy in the car. He's in the driver's seat. I don't know exactly how the accident actually played out, but one of the rails, the smaller wood rails, had went through the driver door like a pixie stick, right? Or like a skewer. It went through the door and had him pinned in the car. So we, like, you know, safely, quietly make our way around the power lines and get access like through the back window into the car and start talking to the guy, but I can't really assess him from the back seat, right? Because the car is just, it's on its wheels, but kind of on its side. But he's like, my legs are, right? Like, I can't get my legs out of here.
So that pole hadn't gone through him. It was just pinning him in the car.
That's what we thought. Right. That's what we thought. So he's like, no, my legs are pinned, right? So from the back seat, it looked like, and again, he's in the driver's seat, came in through the driver door, and it looks like it's over the top of his left leg and under the bottom of his right leg. And it's, you know, it's still like connected to the post that it came out of. So he's wedged in there. And I'm like, it's not in your leg, right? It's not in your right leg. Like, it looks like it went right over your left leg, but it's not going through your right leg. He's like, no, I can't move my legs. So I call for a Sawzall, and they're working on taking the top off. So I cut between the door and his left leg, and the guy doesn't wheeze, shimmer, grunt, nothing, right? Like, I make this cut through the wood post, hand the saw back. I'm like, all right, well, let's try to move your leg. So like, lifts up his left leg, and now I can kind of see. I'm like, you sure that's not in your right leg? And he's like, well, it doesn't hurt or anything. So about this time, they're getting the top off the car. So I'm in the back seat. The guys come around the front, and they start cutting his pants off, because I'm like, I think he's impaled. So they get his pants cut off, and I hear one of the guys go, oh, shit. And I can't see anything. Like, I'm in the back seat leaning over. They're working on him. And the guy's like, what, man? What? How bad is it? And he's like, I don't know how bad it is, but we're going to get you out of here as quick as we can. So we get him out of the car onto a backboard and onto the gurney, and that post had went over his left leg, splintered, and half of it split his nutsack, and then continued on just below his femur, and on the outside of his right leg. I don't know how to describe this without, like, drawing a picture, right? But so, on the outside of his right, his underwear were poking out, and the stick was behind it, and it wasn't bleeding. So it went through his leg, pushed his underwear and the stick completely through his leg and out the other side. And somebody said something about his genitals or something, and that's when he started to freak out. He's like, oh my God, like, he's like, are my boys okay? Like, man, I don't know, but I can see both of them, so I think you're all right. So we'd heard a follow up, it missed both of his balls, and he was out of the OR in like 2 hours or something, and he was okay. Missed his boys, missed his femur.
So why wasn't he bleeding? It just didn't hit any blood vessels or anything?
It didn't hit his femoral artery, and it didn't go through his leg, but I mean, it wasn't bleeding. We had another one, and this was like, it was winter time, and we got a call for a car into a building, and I was coming off shift, but I'm like, oh, sounds interesting. You guys want another hand? They're like, yeah, let's go. And so we pull up on this house, and it looked like the car is up on its side with the frame chassis side of the car facing the road. And there's a body draped over the car. So you can see like the legs, part of the torso, but you can't see the head. It's on the opposite side of the car. It looked like it was staged. There's a massive blood splatter, probably 20 inches in diameter. I'm like, man, it's not Halloween. Like, this is, like I said, this is like 7:30 in the morning. It's daylight. We go walking up there like, what in the hell is going on? Walk around the front side of the car, which would be the roof side. There was a female in the vehicle, somehow lost control, went off the road into a ditch, tangled up in barbed wire, and the car went into a tumble. And the only thing that stopped it was the front portion of the house, that front porch. I mean, her body came out and was wrapped in barbed wire, essentially, and I'm assuming smacked over the top of the car. Her face hit the A-post, so like the windshield post. That's like where the majority of her face was, but it just threw it all at the house when that car stopped. So it's not a funny story by any means, except that we'd been there a few minutes, and all of a sudden that front door opens, and some like 90-year-old man walks outside. He goes, what in the world's going on out here? You know, there's a couple fire engines and an ambulance there. He looks right, and he's like, oh, my goodness, what in the sweet Jesus happened? So he said that he thought he heard, like, some thunder or something the night before, or, you know, early in the morning or something like that. But, yeah, she was froze solid. I mean, the car was cold. She'd been there a while.
Who ended up making the call?
Someone driving by down the road, yeah. Someone saw a car overturned and called it in, but I'm sure it wasn't the first car that drove by there after that happened, because she was frozen, right? So, and that's, I mean, back in those days, there wasn't a ton of traffic on that road, but.
Have you experienced any post-traumatic stress or mental health challenges as a result of your job? And if so, and you feel comfortable enough sharing some of it, how you overcame it or manage it?
I would say that anybody that does this job for any period of time, whether they realize it or not, absolutely had some exposure to it. How it affects them, you know, everybody's different. Some people can brush it off. Like for me, the gore of it and the, you know, the blood and whatnot, that doesn't really bother me. It's always kind of shocking to see it. It's just like, ooh, man, this is bad. But for me, and I figured this out early on, it's like the empathy, right? So not so much for the dead person, but the family, friend, loved one, right? So they're dealing with the hard part, right? Like we're doing everything we can. I can go with some bad ones. I'm not going to do that. But typically after those calls, you know, we'll talk about it a bit. And like the critical incidents, that stress debriefing is a thing. But I've only seen it happen one time, and it was just very poorly managed. But in the department's defense, they didn't know how to deal with it. It was one of our own guys. It was a post-surgery medical complication, young guy. We went on the call, we worked on him. He didn't make it. So we all went to the hospital, and they kept us all there as all the family and other engines were showing up. And so you're seeing everybody coming in, and the department at the time didn't know how to handle it. So they sent us all home, right? So all the crews that were on, once they got coverage, they sent us all home. So what do? You know, we all got together and got drunk. Got a call from the chief a day or two later, like, hey, how you doing? Just checking in. Like, yeah, doing all right. Like, it sucks, but it happens. But that was the end of it. I think a lot of guys, they don't realize what it can do to you over time, right? And they just brush it off, right? Like, I don't need help. Like, I'm a dude. I don't know. I feel pretty good. I've talked to some people, and I mean that just life in general, it can be trying.
Based on what you told me, you've got some good habits outside of work.
I think it's a good way to keep your mind off of it, but kind of what I figured out is keeping your mind off of it and not addressing it.
You have to face it sometime.
That's the way it was explained to me, right? Like you can keep packing it away and packing it away, but at some point it's going to rear its head. But I don't think anybody can do that job that long and not have some form of negative impact on the rest of their life. But I think it's awesome what you're doing. Hope it gets to some people, and if nothing else, they get some laughs out of it, or maybe get some guidance on where to get some help.
I appreciate you taking the time, Mike.
Anytime, man.
Thank you for listening. Please tell your friends and family so that we can bring more joy and awareness to those struggling with suicide ideation and the families who desperately need help after the loss of someone they love to suicide.